Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. This is Marshall.
And this is Michael.
I'm Cole.
And I'm Jennifer.
Cole, you didn't throw in your last name that time.
I didn't.
Are you ashamed now?
No, it's Cole Morgan. It's Cole Morgan.
I was just giving you a hard time. Anyways. it's been a while since we've done a show. Holidays kind of got in the way.
Birthdays.
Yes, no one wanted to record on Christmas except Cole. Which I would have done. Actually, I couldn't have. It turns out a good thing I couldn't have. I was with family.
I was in Mormon land.
What were you doing there?
Visiting a buddy of mine who from college who lived there. He's lived there now for 2 years. One of the most beautiful places I've been to in the U.S., but wow, it is the Mormon church has a stranglehold on that place that you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, they do. Now, is this guy a Mormon, your friend?
No, he's a free thinker. He's an atheist. And it's,
I heard they had that special underwear to get gas there.
Right. I actually... they have quite a few atheist meetup groups in Salt Lake.
Really? Well, that's always true of the areas with the largest religious concentration, is that the atheists and freethinkers just need an outlet.
Yeah.
When totally surrounded by religious lunacy. That's why you in the South, you see some very active freethought groups.
Yeah.
In the North. Like in New York, they don't... What the heck was that? Yeah. Nicole, that was you again.
Ah, damn it.
Stop touching your computer.
I got to quit stroking my computer.
Yes, you do. That's
what are you saying, New York, though?
Hmm?
You're saying, something about New York, the meetup groups.
Yeah, I've just heard that in New York. I mean, it's just not... They have them, but it's just... Considering the population of the area, that the turnout for a lot of these groups is very little, and there's not a lot of enthusiasm because you just don't care.
Right. There's not as much a need for it as, say, if you're like in Alabama or someplace like that.
Yeah, I mean, and I've heard that, like in Europe, it's kind of the same way in a lot of areas where they do have some, but it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it would almost be like having a meeting of air breathers and food eaters. You know, right. Everybody. That includes the entire population.
Hey, we're going to have a meetup.
Yeah.
I like that.
So,
well, it kind of makes sense because those areas are such a bigger blend of cultures, in a diversity of people, as opposed to the South or other areas where you have pretty much like one dominant culture and then you have a lot of subcultures. So,
well, and you know, in California, most areas of California and New York, you're not driving past a religious billboard every couple miles,
right?
That you're going to hell, or you know,
or if you are, you're passing so many of them from so many different religions, you just don't care anymore.
Yes. Hey, you just can't pick a religion.
I want to put up a billboard that says it doesn't matter, we're all going to hell anyway. You know? Which is basically, I forgot some I think it was Bacon who said that. That's if there is a hell, statistically, we're all going there.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, most of us. Your odds are you're not going to avoid it. I did want to mention that I did have some big news since the last time. Sometime in November, I think, is when we recorded our last show. So we didn't talk about Christmas, which, by the way, I had a very enjoyable Christmas. Even though my entire family is one degree or the other of religious and Christian, not a lot of that. It just kind of had a fun secular Christmas where everyone got a present or a gift card, and we didn't talk about Jesus and all that stuff. So it was a fun time. How well?
Chinese, went and watched the movie.
Perfect. You know, actually,
I went to the casino and watched a movie.
Yeah. That's what Christmas is all about, if you ask me.
Well, it's my birthday, too, so I was like, everybody come hang out at the casino, watch movies. So I had about 8 people come out and watch a movie with me and go on the boat and lose a little bit of money, and it was a good night.
So it sounds like we all had a kind of an, well, I didn't have an adventure, but I had a good time with my family. And but
Oh, I suppose.
you know, one of the best Christmases I've ever had was when I was in the Army, and I was on base, and family had sent me all these presents and candy and stuff like that, and I just sat in my room and watched movies all night long. And for some reason, that just sticks out to me. It's such a peaceful, and there was no Jesus, there was no religion, but just a very peaceful and enjoyable time. And I was the only one. It was just everybody else was gone on leave, and I was like the only person in the dorm or in the barracks. But anyway,
Why was that?
because I didn't want to spend the money to go to Kansas. I was in California.
Oh, yeah.
And
Besides, it's warm in California. Why go back to Kansas when it
yeah,
was probably degrees?
that's what I was thinking. I'm in the Army. I'm not gonna stay in here forever. I'll see you. I'll have other Christmases. Today, I'm just gonna be the only one here. Sit back, watch a movie or several movies, and just enjoy myself. I kind of had watched some horror movies and got a rented a. Some cassette, or not cassette, VHS tapes from The Twilight Zone and watch that.
Wow, VHS, that's way back in the day.
Yes, yeah. Although they did have DVD players back then, but I just didn't have one. I also had some, I had some big news over since the last time. In addition to the fact that my father passed away, we also
Oh, who is
Jennifer.
that?
Huh? What?
Your computer's being evil
Hello?
again.
Is it?
Yes.
I'm not stroking my laptop.
It's Jennifer.
Is my microphone going in and out again?
It's real staticky. There,
Yeah.
stop. It stopped.
Okay.
All right. Dang microphone. You sound like a Star Wars hologram of Princess Leia. You know.
How fitting. I have been playing a lot of Old Republic.
Is that a good? You like that?
Oh, I love it. It's an awesome game. Lots of fun.
I broke down and bought it. I just started it.
Oh, you'll have to. I'll have to send you my server. You'll have to join our server.
Okay. Are you Sith or are you Empire or Republic?
Republic on one server, Empire on the other.
Yeah, I'll
So.
do that. Yeah, because yeah, it's a fun game. It's very story driven.
Yes.
We always seem to break down in at least one conversation about video games. You know, we started this conversation with me mentioning that my father died, and now we're talking about
I know, I'm
Star
so
Wars.
sorry.
What was the other big? You said he had more big news.
Yes.
And we adopted a new cat.
Oh,
Aww.
congratulations.
Thank you. But anyway, my father passing, I told everybody, I told Michael, Cole, and Jennifer this before we started recording. We did not have a close relationship. He was, I'm not gonna badmouth him, but he was extremely fanatically religious. In fact, when we were cleaning out his house after he died, he had notebook after notebook of notes that he had taken, or just transcribing the Bible. He was actually working on his own translation of the Bible. He
Wow.
was out there. Actually his death gave open up an opportunity for me or my half brother and I to get to know each other a little bit better because we haven't had a lot to do with one another, and this gave us a chance to actually we spent Christmas together, so that was
That's
good.
cool.
Yeah, so that
Yeah.
was part of why it was a great Christmas. And he is very religious too, but I'm not going to allow that to be an issue. It might be an issue on his part that I'm not religious, that we haven't come to that bridge yet. But the fact that he's very religious, he's part of the Vinland Church.
Oh, you mean the vineyard?
Yeah,
Vineyard?
Vineyard, yes.
Oh, yeah. I
They're
know some
very
people.
they're kind of conservative. I believe they do the speaking in tongues. And
yeah, they tend to lean more on the charismatic side. But yeah, I had been to my share of vineyard churches back in the day.
Well, they got started with the Toronto Blessing.
Right, Wimber, a guy by the name of John Wimber, kind of started the vineyard.
Which was total lunacy. Right. If you got to Google Toronto Blessing someday and watch some of those videos on YouTube. Yeah.
People making animal sounds and the
total insanity. Yeah. I don't know if they still do that.
Yeah.
Because I think they've kind of distanced themselves from him.
There's a few in Kansas City, though.
Yes.
They're all over the country. In fact, a guy who's real popular with this new apostolic reformation thing that's trying to influence politics right now, Mike Bickle, he was pastor of the Kansas City. He's now president of that IHOP thing.
Yeah.
He pastored the main vineyard church in Kansas City for a long time. So you guys are home to some major craziness there in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. Well, Topeka. We're not that far from Topeka, too. Right. And that's the home of the Phelps family.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Kansas is very familiar with insanity.
Right.
I mean, we got a creationist governor.
Is there a vineyard church in Kansas?
Oh, yeah, in Overland Park.
Oh, really?
They're all over the country, vineyard churches. They're everywhere.
I'm familiar with one in Missouri.
Yeah, well, that's the one my brother goes to then, right. In Kansas City.
The one on I-35?
I guess.
They're at, what is that, Vivian Road and I-35?
Yeah, yes. I was there, actually, not too long ago. Yeah. Well, they had a service for my father there. And which it was so weird because the minister kept having to... He invited people up to give testimonials, and he kept having to say, "No, we don't want to hear anything negative. Just keep it positive, guys."
And
wow. I'm not going to use this as an opportunity to go off. You know, he's gone. But one thing it reminded me of is I was reading not too long ago, and I've read on a number of occasions, is I don't know who it was, if it was the Templeton Foundation or the Gallup or Pew or some organization did a survey and determined that free thinkers, non-believers, are more likely than believers to have had difficult relationships with their father. That if you don't believe in God, then statistically you're probably more likely to dislike your father or have some sort of contentious relationship with him. And excuse me.
I would have to agree with that.
Sorry. Yeah, I do actually too. And well, let me go into why I think it's probably true. Because at first when I heard that, I was offended by it. Because it makes atheism sound like some sort of rebellious reaction to bad parenting. Which I don't think it is, obviously. But one reason I think it's true is because, and Richard Dawkins has discussed this, is I think instinctively children are prone to believe what they are told by adults, particularly their parents, to just trust them rather than having to learn everything the hard way. I think that it's probably, you know, if you start off by believing what the people who love you tell you, you're more likely to survive than otherwise. This has been argued, like I said, by Richard Dawkins and various other biologists and behaviorists. So, if you have a father who breaks the bonds of trust, that you don't respect and whose opinion you don't value, that doesn't make you an atheist, but it opens up a door to the possibility that his belief in God is false. Whereas if you had a very close, loving relationship with your father, you might be more inclined to just take his beliefs as your own automatically. I don't know.
I don't know. I would need to see. I don't know that I would agree with that. And I want, or I wonder if this would be a, and I don't mean to be like sound sex or something, a male versus female thing. Because I didn't have any type of negative or contentious relationship with my father at all. You know, we're very loving. We're not, I'm closer to my mom than I am my dad, but you know, I mean, there was never any time when I, you know, wanted, and I guess what I'm thinking is a lot of men in general seem to kind of, how do I put this? It there's that point in time where a lot of guys kind of feel like they need to stand up to their father's authority, and not to say that girls don't do it too, but it just seems to be that guys do this more often than girls do. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's a, I don't know if that's a valid observation or not, but yeah. I just kind of feel like they're actually grasping at straws. I feel like that they're just trying to find basically a way to go. I do think it is a way to go, oh, well, you know, bad fathers make atheists. And I just don't think that's true at all. I don't know. Well, I know, but I guess what I'm saying is I just kind of see, I see maybe a correlation, but not a causation.
Oh, I agree. Because, I agree.
Because
yeah, I agree with that. Yes.
This This something like this. Wow. It to me it screams case by case basis. I mean, I can just go based on my own experience. Now, I wasn't raised in a religious household at all, and I shocked my parents. I grieved my parents when I became a born again evangelical fundamentalist Christian. You know, my dad, our relationship, it's been up and down, but you know, my relationship with my father became worse when I became a religious believer. Mm-hmm. Now, since I've departed from faith, you know, we still have our differences, but it's much better. I don't know. I mean, relationships, especially one's relationship with parents, it's so complicated. I don't know. I really couldn't. I'm not too trustful of a study like this. I'm not saying it's not legit, but it just, again, I'll shut up, but it says this, something like this screams case by case basis, at least to me.
Yeah, but I think it can be boiled down in a different manner. I think it's probably true not just about religion. I think if the question is, are people who don't, if you love and have a loving, compassionate relationship with your parents, are you more likely or less likely to share their beliefs and interest? I think the answer is you're more likely. And I don't think it necessarily has to be religion. It is just that's what they focused on in the survey.
Yeah.
But I think that's just a difference in personalities. I mean, just because you are, you know, I mean, how do I put this? There are certain family members of mine that I don't necessarily hate, but I don't have a good relationship with them because we're just two very different people. And that has nothing to do with any ill will or anything between us, but we just don't mesh. So I don't know. I guess I still just feel like it's still kind of a correlation, not a causation type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Perhaps maybe I'm an exception to the rule. I mean, I get along well with my parents, but we don't have a whole lot in common on a lot of areas.
Sure.
And keep in mind that they weren't saying that if you don't like your parents, you're guaranteed to be an atheist.
Sure.
They're just saying that you're statistically more likely to be. What exactly the cause for that is, I don't know. I mean, if we assume that the data is accurate, that they did a legitimate job of polling and coming up with this report, and like I said, I didn't take the time. I've read it a number of times, but I don't remember who did it, and it really doesn't matter as far as this discussion is concerned. I think it's plausible. I think it's possible. I don't think it's indicative of the validity of atheism or non-belief or the non-validity of it. I just think there's this possibility, and again, I'm not a psychologist and could easily be entirely off base about this, but it could be just a factor that allows you to dismiss your father's belief based upon a lack of trust and experience not, you know, negative experiences with him. Could be wrong. Very distinctly possible. So anyway, again, my father's passing, sadly, was not a traumatic event for me because we were not even remotely close. He was a member, a lifelong member of the Worldwide Church of God, which I personally consider a cult. It split up, I think, in the 90s. Into two or three different churches, each fanatically fundamentalist and freaky, but unable to agree upon which insane interpretation of Scripture was superior.
Yeah, I seem to remember, speaking of the Worldwide Church of God, and you're talking about the split, I think part of it, at least, a stream of it, went to what is considered evangelical Orthodox Christian doctrine. Because I seem to remember Hank, the Bible answer man, Hank Handicap. No, Hank Hennegraaff saying, the Worldwide Church of God has moved from cultism to, or from being a cult to Orthodox Christian doctrine. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, and so, yeah, I'm not an expert on it, but I do, it did, yeah, parts of it split off and went in what it sounds like multiple directions.
Yeah, and part of the organization is non-Trinitarian, in that they do not believe in the Trinity, and stay very close to Jewish Old Testament traditions, and really kind of dismiss a lot of the New Testament. Their focus is Old Testament. They're still Christian and still believe that. I'm not totally familiar with their theology, but they worship Jesus and they worship God the Father. I don't think they necessarily believe in the Holy Spirit, at least one or two of the sects, the branches of it. But an interesting note, a connection to my father's death and a recent event, and I got to find this story on my high-priced iPad. And I'm trying to sell, by the way. Listeners out there wanting a... Where did I do with this story? Oh, God. Oh, here it is.
God.
Oh, lack of God.
Okay, there.
Oh, non-existent figment of my parents' imagination. Yes. All right. Ronald Wineland, who I'm going to guess my father knew personally. Oh, God, a pop-up. Has been contending for years, apparently, and this has only been recently making news, that Jesus Christ is returning on May 27th, 2012.
Hey, that's not too far off from camping's date. That's almost a year at. That's
yeah, you're right. A year and 6 days. A year and 6 days. Jesus is kind of cutting it close, though, because that comet's going to be hitting shortly after, within a year. But he will be returning on, I don't know, Camping had this bizarre Bible math that he came up with his date, where he assigned certain words, numerical values to certain words, and it would be like, love equals 4, and this equals this, and this love times sacrifice divided by, you know, all sorts of wacky shit. And that's how he came up with his date. They don't really go into how Ronald Wineland came up with May 27th, 2012. Odds are he just pulled it out of his ass. Because the Worldwide Church of God has on more than one occasion predicted Jesus' return. Obviously, with less than, you know, perfect results on those predictions. But an interesting thing that I think is hilarious. In an effort to squash dissent, he hasn't let everybody know that for those of us who do not believe him and mock his message, which I think is applicable to all of us, Wineland claims they will die from cancer. Very quickly, I assume, because You know?
Yeah, because there's not much time left. So,
yeah, May 27th. That's got to be a fast-acting cancer. So yeah. I'm going to guess that we already have it and just don't know about it. And but and I'm getting this from goddiscussions.com, which it's a website I just recently stumbled upon, but I urge listeners to check it out because it's an interesting website. Anyway, my dad went to that church. That's how messed up his religious beliefs were. And there's a nice little video of Ronald Wineland, who I'd never heard of before, but again, I'm sure my father was very familiar with him. So we've got, what is it, 5 months? A little over 5 months. A little over 5 months.
Yeah, at least we could still have Reason Rally before that.
Mm-hmm. I like deadlines. Because, yes, exactly. I like, I'm a big fan of religious wackos who predict Jesus' return sometime within their lifetime. Yeah. You know, sometime within my lifetime. So we get to, once again, point out how wrong they are. And then we get to watch Christians, once again, point out that, well, that doesn't really count.
You know, the funny and amusing thing is that what Christians don't want to realize is that their God, Jesus, was... All these religious wackos who make these false end-time predictions, they're following in the footsteps of Jesus, who predicted the end times.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, the lifetime of his followers. So all these guys are doing is following in the footsteps of Jesus. I mean, people don't want to admit that, but it is. But, you know, I remember... This last May 21st, 2011, that was a great day. I had a blast of a time. A skeptic, one of my skeptic meetup groups here, we had a rapture party, and it was just hilarious. I remember reading about how right outside Family Radio headquarters, they had like a big rally, and then like they balloons and everything. I remember that day. That was fun. I doubt that we'll ever have another day a prediction that'll generate as much hoopla as that, but you never know.
One thing that I think drives this tendency of people to predict Jesus's return sometime in their lifetime is, because I've met people like this, there are a lot of evangelical Christians who are absolutely convinced that Jesus will return during their lifetime and that they will not die, that they will be spared that particular experience. And they are absolutely convinced. I've had conversations with people like that. Not debates, just I found it fascinating. And there's really no point in debating it.
Right. Someone that deluded is not going to listen to reason or common sense.
Yeah, but absolutely convinced that they will not die. And, I mean, and that's about as crazy a thing as you could possibly say. But there are people who are legally can vote who actually believe that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of scary when you think about it. But anyway, that's kind of an insight into my father's beliefs, because I'm sure... Because actually the minister at my father's funeral, who was a member of this sect, kept talking about... He didn't say May 27th, but he kept talking about how the end times are soon and coming really soon, and it's just a matter of time. God, he went on for an hour. He spoke for an hour at my father's funeral. It was horrible.
Wow.
I think he read his seminary dissertation or something. It was the worst funeral I've ever been to. And it was outside, and it was freezing cold.
Go off about the end times at the funeral for someone, come on. God. Have some class, you know what I mean?
Exactly. But I think he's
That's what bothers me. Yeah, I was just going to say that's what bothers me at religious funerals is 9 times out of 10, it's like 10 words are said about the actual person who died, and the rest of it is, praise Jesus. And it's like, great, thanks. Yeah, that's what I really want to talk about when somebody that I love has passed away. Thanks,
well,
you know?
I've heard, I'm not making this up, and I've heard... ministers interviewed, pastors, clergy members interviewed, and they say, you know, funerals are a wonderful opportunity to preach the gospel, you know, to remind people of our mortality, to
absolutely
get right with the Lord, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah. Yeah, it's like they, man, religion. They prey. They prey off people in vulnerable situations. It's, you know, it's sickening. It makes me angry, actually.
Yes, yeah, it does. I was pretty mad because it was just one of those hours that I'm never going to get back. Listening to this guy quote scripture, occasionally he would remember that it was my father's funeral. So he would say something basically to the fact that, oh, and my father, and Floyd agreed with all this, by the way, and which was not comforting to the rest of us. Not at all. So, okay. Well, we have that to look forward to, the 27th, world coming to an end, and you know, as the world economy kind of stutters to a halt, and the prospect of war in Iran goes up, and all sorts of really negative news out there continues to be dominant.
Do you guys hear that? I hear it blowing. Sorry, Adam.
No, I can't hear it unless it's me this time. Okay. Is it me?
I don't know.
Okay, it's fine. It's not this. I mean, not disrupt. I just, you know, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, did you say May 21st? That's on a Monday.
No, May 27th.
27th.
That's on a Sunday.
Woo-hoo. We should record.
It should be fun. Yeah, we should. We should do like a 24-hour live stream, drunken live stream.
Oh, that could be fun. We start out the podcast completely sober and just get drunker as
drunk. That would be kind of fun. We might actually have to seriously consider that because that would be kind of funny.
Daryl would probably love to get in on that.
Oh yeah, I bet he would actually.
27. His points.
Yeah, we need to talk. We need to talk to him about his new book. Too. Yeah, I think that recently came out. But anyway, I was talking about how the world's going to crap, but there's an Islamic cleric in Europe, according to International Business Times, who wants to focus on the really important issues of the day. And, oh gosh, I can't even pronounce this guy. He's from Egypt, but this cleric... And this happened a while ago. A lot of people have talked about it, but this cleric has urged the importance of making sure that your women do not touch or be anywhere close to bananas and cucumbers to avoid having their mind wander to thinking about the male penis. Because all hell will break loose.
Oh my gosh!
That's taking sexual repression / oppression to a whole new level that I didn't think was possible.
So if men take a banana and eat it, then we're gay.
Well, he doesn't specifically say that men should avoid, because one thing he goes on to, and this particular article I'm looking at isn't as there was a better article that I can't find, but just Google Islamic cleric cucumbers and bananas, and you'll find a bunch of articles if your audience members want to check this out. But one thing he pointed out, somebody asked him, well, are you suggesting that women can't eat bananas or cucumbers or zucchinis or and things like that? He says, no, they can eat it, but a male family member, it has to be a family member for some reason, has to take the banana or cucumber or zucchini or whatever into another room outside of the woman's sight and cut it up into sections and then bring it to her.
That could actually be a way for some women to get back at their husbands and really say, you know, we really need some cucumbers and some bananas for supper, and I can't prepare them, so, you know, you're going to have to cut them up for me.
Yes, that's a good point. Maybe this is just a clever effort to get the men in Islamic men to be more cooperative and helpful in the household.
That could be.
This is not a very informative article. Again, I'm finding it on the International Business Times.com or IBI Times or IBTimes.com.
So what does that mean for markets and grocery stores? Are they going to have to cover them so that way, you know, women won't be embarrassed by the immodesty of seeing something that might be mistaken for a phallic symbol?
Well, if this Islamic cleric had his way, I guarantee you, yes.
I think if this Islamist cleric had his way, women probably wouldn't even go out in public. Because, that's the reason why it has to be a male family member, is because women aren't allowed to be around men who unescorted by those who are not their family members already, so.
Yes. Yeah, can you imagine the morality police, which actually a variety of Islamically dominant nations have morality police, breaking into your house and saying, "We understand that a stranger cut your zucchini." It sounds like a euphemism for something. It's particularly funny when it's actually literally what they would mean in that situation.
Yes.
All right, more Islamic fun. Well, actually, this is the opposite. This one doesn't have even an ounce of levity to it. And by the way, in fairness to the Islamic community, the majority of Islam does not share this cleric's view on the subject, on the topic. Most of them viewed what he had to say as rather insane. But the thing is there is no way, outside of a religious context, there's no way a person thinks that that's a reasonable course of action.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Religion really is necessary for a person to come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
So.
And to be that perverted.
Yes.
Cut my banana up.
Yeah. Somebody should ask that minister or that cleric. So, what do you think of when you see a banana?
Yeah, exactly.
So apparently, you think they're rather attractive.
You want to ban orchids?
Orchids?
They look like orchids or different flowers that happen to maybe resemble a female anatomy.
Yeah, there's Islam tends to recognize a very healthy double standard on that type of thing. Orchids are fine. But bananas.
But boobs aren't, because remember they wanted to cut the breasts off of mannequins.
Oh, that's right. Or and the Islamic cleric said that boobs were causing earthquakes.
Yes, yes.
The presence of boobs.
And that's the reason why women have to pray in the back of the mosque, because they don't want the men looking at their covered behinds and lusting after them while they're praying.
You know what? I'm going to have to side with them on that one. I've been to plenty of times where that's what I've done. Michael, are you with me on that? Have you ever done that?
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Oh, God. You just missed some comedy gold, Michael. I swear.
The women have to pray in the back of the church because the men will look at their covered behinds and lust after them. But it's stupid there then also, because wouldn't the women have the same problem? I don't know. I'm just kind of confused by that.
You know, but this conversation has me thinking. I mean, you talk to a lot of Muslim women, they'll claim that Islam liberates women. I mean, they'll claim that they truly feel liberated by wearing the veil. I've talked to them. It's in all these regulations. It's pretty crazy if you ask me.
Yeah, but that really is a aspect of success, in my opinion, successful brainwashing. Because I have heard it argued that burqas allow women to exist in an atmosphere where they're not being judged on their appearance.
Right.
That may be true.
And
but
there may be
oh,
some.
Oh, no, I
that,
agree.
Yeah.
It is oppressive, but I'm just saying that's the power of religion to delude people.
You know,
to think something to be so oppressive is liberating, you know?
Right. No, I agree. I mean, and there may be some truth to that. You know, if a woman isn't, you know, if a woman is completely covered, then she may not be judged by her appearance as much. But I don't know. I guess I feel like it's such I hesitate to say minor thing in our society, because obviously culturally, you know, in our society, women are very, very sexualized. But at the same time, they would be singled out in a different way in like our culture, because then you would just look at them and some people would just feel sorry for them or think they're being oppressed or think they're just stupid. So I mean, I don't know. I just think it. You know, they view it one way and the rest of the world doesn't quite see it like that.
Yeah. No, I agree. So All right, more news on Islamic oddities. And this is actually a very sad, frighteningly common thing. In Afghanistan, let me give you some, go into something that's very common in Sharia-based legal systems, is if you are a woman and you happen to be raped, and you accuse, you go to the legal authorities and accuse so-and-so, someone having raped you, What you've done is admitted that you've had premarital sex, which will be, so you're actually guilty of a crime until you can prove that you were raped. So if you fail to prove that you're raped, you're now then responsible for the fact that you've had premarital sex. This has come up a lot, and recently it's come up in Afghanistan where a woman was raped by a relative, and I'm getting this from therawstory.com. It doesn't say how close a relative. I don't know if it was a cousin or something. It had to have been a cousin at the very least. Raped by a relative, was impregnated, put in jail for having sex out of wedlock, despite, even though she was raped because she wasn't able to prove it. To the standards of Sharia law, which I think requires two male witnesses or something like that. I can't recall. She wasn't able to produce them. A petition was put together. This is kind of cool. A petition was put together by people in Afghanistan asking that the government release her from jail. And she was released. Her name was Gulnaz. I'm not even going to... Gulnaz? Oh my God. Sounds like a alien race from Star Trek or something. But anyway, she was released from jail by President Hamid Karzai as a result of this petition. And the sad thing is that it took a petition to get him to order her release. That he was just going to let it go on without the petition.
Gee, our efforts there are spreading such a progressive community.
Yeah, no, they're just as bad as the Taliban. But she was released on the condition that she marry the person who raped her, the family member who raped her.
Sure.
And I don't know where I wanted to mention it, but I don't know what to say about this. I mean, this is horrifying on a lot of
I'll levels. Say this, allow those, anybody who might be Christian out there listening, guess what? That's in the Christian Bible too. You're supposed to marry your rapist if you're raped.
Yes.
And you, if you cannot prove it, which basically proof, your proof in the Christian Bible is if no one hears you scream in the city, then you are complicit. And in the country, you're granted a little bit more of a reprieve because if you scream, you might not be around people who can hear you. But yeah, if nobody hears you scream and you're raped, then you've had premarital sex and are complicit in your rape and are to be punished by being killed or marrying a rapist. Oh, or if you're and if you are that and that's if you are a single woman. If you are a betrothed woman, you and your rapist are both killed. So you know, just so you know. Because it bugs me when Christians say, "Oh, well, that's just Islamic religion." No, that's in the Christian religion too. So we just don't follow it.
Right. I mean, it's in the Christian holy book, the Bible. But no, I mean, unfortunately, this is not as sad as it is. It's not a surprise. But you know, there's a lot of obviously misogynistic stuff in the Bible. But I think, we're skeptical of all religions, but I think from what I've read and from what I know about Islam takes it to a whole new level. I mean, it's just, you know, you meant these rape laws. But again, you know, I mean, we have similar, as Jennifer mentioned, we have similar things in the Bible. But, you know, I mean, it's just so obviously anti-women. I mean, I remember several Muslim guys have told me this, you know, in the Islamic religion, you can be a guy. If you're a guy, you can marry non-Muslim women. But if you're a Muslim woman, you can't marry non-Muslim men. Now, what does that tell you right there? That's, isn't that the double standard?
Well, obviously? Yeah, and there's a very healthy
women are property. Women are property. That's what it tells you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, an interesting note. I recently read that now, and there's no central authority in Islamic religion, so a lot of times when you hear a cleric make a pronouncement or a fatwa, he's just speaking for himself and his particular community. But I think this was in Iran, where you can now get a divorce if you text your wife, and it has to be the husband texting the wife, "I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you." That's legally qualifies as a legal divorce, which is, I think, is hilarious. Again, the double standard being that she can't text him and say, "Go to hell, go to hell, go to hell." that it has to come from him. Now, I do believe that women are supposed to be able to pursue a divorce in Islam, but I also believe that it is not a very safe decision to make in a lot of Islamic regions if you are a woman.
I'm betting the only way you could probably get a divorce as a woman is if you could prove your husband was committing adultery, but I don't even, you know, and I'm not sure on, because there again, you know, a lot of religions, you know, adultery should just be the married man having sex with somebody else, but I don't know what enough about Islam to know, like, how that breaks down, you know, so. Mm-hmm. Because obviously in Afghanistan, we've talked about it before, you know, men can have little boys to have fun with, and that's not considered adultery, apparently, so.
It's not even considered homosexuality.
Right, so, you know, who knows what a woman has to do to get a divorce.
Yeah.
Men can have little boys to be sexual slaves?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Islam is I thought Islam is anti-homosexuality.
They don't. This is in certain regions of Afghanistan and Pakistan, and I'm going to guess India too. It's an area where women are confined to their houses and required to wear burqas. So if you're a man out in the community, the only other humans you're going to meet are other men or boys. And it is considered acceptable to have a young boy who pleasures you sexually through his youth. And it, apparently, if you have a rather attractive young boy, it's a sign of social status. We talked about this several episodes ago, and it's just a fascinating insight as to the disconnect. The obvious disconnect between their hardcore stance on homosexuality and what they're doing and what is permittable.
Well, and I don't even know that this would even I don't know if this would be considered pederasty or even just flat out pedophilia. I mean, because I think that the kids that they are taking on are as young as 8, and you know, to me, that's not consensual. There's no way that can be consensual. So I would even consider that to be, you know, pedophilia. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how you could reconcile sex being, you know, a complete heterosexual and then having sex with a child, especially a child of the same sex. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All I can think of is it's weird because I guess maybe in that way they're saving their young girls because they are property, so if they are defiled at a young age, they won't be as valuable to sell off to their arranged marriage. I don't know how that works, but it's really bizarre to me.
You know, it is.
Yeah, you know, Jennifer, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was just thinking of it. I may have mentioned this before on the podcast, but, you know, the religions that we're most familiar with, the various Christian religions here in the West, because we're Westerners, I mean, you know, the Catholic Church does it, and the Evangelical Fundamentalist Protestant Church does it. I mean, you may notice that they have a hang-up. They're obsessed with virginity, especially with females, even though I don't think the Bible explicitly even says premarital sex is wrong, but...
Well, they do in the sense that if you marry a woman and it turns out she was not a virgin, you can kill her.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, right. But my point is, I mean, this whole virginity, what many Christians don't want to acknowledge is that, you know, it seems that the evidence points that this whole focus on virginity is rooted in, as what Jennifer said, this belief that women are property. You know, if she's not a virgin, she's been used. She's been, so this really, yeah, people should pay attention to the roots of these traditions they follow and these things that they claim signal such purity.
Well, especially like the whole idea of marriage. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. Marriage was basically state-sanctioned prostitution because it was a father selling his child, his female child, to the highest bidder.
It's still state-sanctioned prostitution.
Yeah.
Well.
But I guess what I mean is what marriage has evolved to today, which is consenting adults who love each other getting married, at least in most cases. Everybody seems to be deluded into thinking that that's what marriage always was, and it wasn't. It was always a financial deal between two men with their children. It's just funny to me that they're like, oh, we have to preserve the sanctity of marriage. I'm like, really? So you're for selling your daughters? That's great. You know, I mean, they just don't stop and think about or research where these things came from to begin with. So
yeah,
because that's the reason why a rapist is supposed to marry his victim, because he has defiled her and he has cost her father money, and that's one of the things that he's supposed to do is pay money to her father and then marry her, so that way the father isn't out that money he would have gotten to marry her off as a virgin to the highest bidder.
It's kind of the ancient version of you break it, you buy it. I mean, literally.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
I was going to sell this girl to the whoever, and now I can't. You've totally ruined this transaction for me. And the government stepped in instead of saying, wow, that guy needs to be imprisoned and or whatever, say, all right, here's what we'll do. He'll give you 30 pieces of silver. And take care of her, and you'll marry her off to her. And who the fuck cares what the woman has to say about it?
Right.
As she's screaming in horror as she's being dragged off to the home of her rapist.
Of course, I guess in some ways, if you know this, it could also be worked in a way to where if you actually did love somebody and you wanted to get married to him, you could say, come on, do this, and you know. So, I mean, I guess it could have been used in that way too, but
it could also be used in a situation for very nefarious purposes, where if you're a guy and you say, I really like that girl, but there's no way they're gonna marry her off to me, I know, I'll rape her.
Exactly. Yeah,
problem solved. I've got 30 silver. I mean, I don't know if it was ever used by it in that manner, but it certainly opens the door. And I mean, can you imagine a legal system, Christian's wet dream, where we actually had a legal system based upon these rules, you would see that kind of stuff happening all the time.
Well, the Christian Reconstructionists, they want to restore the Mosaic law in America. Their ideal view is to have the Mosaic law as the governing law here in the U.S. So would they have that as well? Is that what they want? That would be my question.
Yeah.
And it would make sense because there are plenty. Didn't we talk about there's the Mormon pastor who basically said rape isn't a crime, that there's no such thing as rape, and there have been other Christian individuals, like leaders, that have said that too, that they don't even believe rape exists, especially rape in a marriage. A married man can never rape his wife, according to some Christians.
According to the law in Afghanistan and various other Islamic nations, that you can deny your wife food and water if she abstains from sex.
Ugh.
And you can continue to do that until she willingly has sex with you. I don't know if you can forcibly have sex with her according to the law over there, although I'm sure if it happened, you're not going to have to worry about the police coming.
if you can starve her, you and I think there are some areas in Islamic worlds where you can beat your wife if she's not obedient. You can probably forcibly have sex with her. I mean, I can't, you know, the women are so abused in those areas of the world. I can't think that rape would be any different.
Mm-hmm.
The Quran itself authorizes men to beat their wives.
Right.
You know, actually, this episode, I don't remember if it was last episode or the episode before, reminds me of an email I got from a one-time listener who said that that we hated Christianity and we never criticized Islam. I think we do.
Well, here you go.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I've got another, and this isn't by design. This is just the most horrific and sadly interesting stories that I found had a lot to do with Islam and women. But this one happened in the United States. Per the Detroit News, an individual named John Benitez Jr. was fired by the clinic he worked for. He worked for a city taxpayer-funded health clinic. And he was fired because he was assisting or providing care to female Muslim clients. I guess he was a nurse and he was assisting Muslim women in violation of clinic's policy. And Detroit and Michigan has a fairly large, comparatively large Muslim population.
Yeah, Dearborn, Michigan in particular, which is right outside Detroit.
Yeah.
Right.
And, this is Dearborn, city of Dearborn. And the interesting thing is I actually support the clinic's decision to fire him. I mean, and this sounds contrary to what I would normally say, because it sounds like I'm agreeing with the religious fanatics who don't want a male nurse within in the same building as their daughter or wife or mother or whatever. But in this particular situation is you will have a lot of fathers or husbands who will, if they know that there's a chance that a male nurse or doctor is going to be treating their wife, they won't let her go to receive care. That she'll have to stay home and hopefully she'll get better on her own. But she's not going to the clinic if she's going to have a male taking her temperature and looking at her feet or whatever. So there was actually a reason for this barbaric-sounding policy, this very sexist and horrible-sounding policy, but I understand it.
Well, and I think I heard a little bit about this. Wasn't he basically told you cannot serve female... I mean, wasn't he warned before he was fired?
Yes.
You know, that's...
That makes a huge difference then. I mean, if that were the rules and he willingly disobeyed, then, yeah, I could see why they would have fired him.
But, you know...
And I get what you're saying. It makes sense because, you know, you don't want these women to go without care. So, yeah, I'm with you. I unfortunately support the decision as well because I think, you know, yeah, this guy is going to basically cause a bunch of women to not get the medical treatment they need if he insists on treating them when he knows full and well why he's not supposed to.
Yes. Let me point out, though, that I think it's quite possible that he will win his lawsuit because I know in where I work that I cannot legally not hire a person based on their gender. I can't say I would prefer a male not work at this particular house or a female not work at the, unless I had a very significant reason. And if you had a situation where men cannot work with male employees cannot work with female patients, but female employees could work with male patients, I think you might be able to make a pretty convincing case of sex discrimination there. So that clinic really might be in a between a rock and a hard place.
Right. Well, that would be a curious thing.
Here that that's telling us what to do.
What's that?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't this what it boils down to? A religion that's telling us how to run the hospitals?
Well, no.
In a sense, I guess, you know.
Yeah, in some ways, yes. I mean, that's the reason why I agree. They're between a rock and a hard spot, because the thing is, yeah, that is kind of allowing the religion to dictate how that hospital operates. But at the same time, what's the lesser of the two evils at this point in time? Not saying that we shouldn't fight this, you know, this idea that men can treat women, because what if because you have to have a male doctor, you're more likely going to have a male doctor. I mean, it's not even just the male nurse thing. You're most likely going to have a male doctor. So the other issue though is what's the lesser of two evils? Telling this hospital that you have to have the male nurse help the women, or having these women not being able to have access to the health care because, you know, they, you know, I don't know how you remedy that, because these women should be able to have the right to tell their husband to go fuck off, basically. Sorry,
but they won't.
But, you know, but they won't. And that's the issue, is, you know.
Unfortunately, it's not ideal. It's the nature of the beast. But the fact of the matter is that they are in Dearborn. When Dearborn... Mm-hmm. May have the largest Muslim population. May have the largest Arab population. I mean, not all Arabs are Muslim, but yeah, it's a heavily Muslim area, and it is what it is. You know, it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah. So anyway, anything else anyone wants to finish off on that one? Because if not, I think we'll wrap this show up, because I have to go pee, quite frankly.
All right, see you later.